Just a moment. Just a moment.
Welcome to the Future Law Podcast, exploring where the law has been.
Hey Siri, take a selfie.
And where it's going.
Oh, good afternoon.
From the brilliant.
My name is Sophia, and I am the latest and greatest robot.
To the scary.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
And everything in between. Please welcome your very real and very human host, Mike Madison.
Hello and welcome. I'm Mike Madison, law professor at the University of Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're kicking off 2021 with a conversation about work of all sorts with a special guest, Lisa Leon. Lisa is a broadcaster and business consultant and, in a former life, a lawyer. She's based in Melbourne and works in Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. Lisa hosts This Working Life, a program on ABC Radio National. She is also CEO of Oten APAC, a consultancy on leadership, collaboration, and innovation, working with law firms and other professional services organizations. Most important to me, though, she was one of the original co-hosts of the Future Law Podcast with me and Dean Dan Hunter. Lisa's other gigs pulled her away from this podcast at the start of 2020, and I wanted to catch up with her, find out what she's been up to over the last year, and hear what she's looking forward to for 2021. Lisa Leong, welcome back to the Future Law Podcast.
It's a reunion. I'm so excited. Mike, it's so nice.
It's been months since we chatted. So what have you been up to?
Nothing much. How about you? Just joking. Well, you know the word pivot? I have done the dance of a pivot upon pivot. I want to take you back to March because that was actually the last time we spoke, and two things happened to me. So with my ABC role, we were the kind of experimental guinea pigs, Maria Tickle, my producer, and I, of This Working Life, in terms of going remote. So we called it quite early, actually, and said, you know, it's looking like things are shutting down here. Maybe we shouldn't go into the studio. What would it be like to broadcast our show, record our show from our homes? Now, in those days, like there was no setup. So we decided to create like our own lab, and we just started tinkering around. And what we decided to do was just use our own just use the things that made sense to us rather than thinking about the technology itself. So how do we want to interact with each other? How do we want to get the best quality? Because that's really important for ABC Radio National, audio quality. And then how do we want to, you know, sort of engage our guests on this as well? And I think there was a learning there, Mike. So one of our core learnings is don't get obsessed with the technology. Don't do too much research, just enough, and just try it. So, you know, I had a mic already. I just sort of used that. We started simple. I just plugged it into my laptop. We actually used Zencastr first, and we've stuck with that. So, because audio is the most important thing. And I think, well, we became probably the first people to do it. So other people learnt from our failings and mistakes. So that was the first thing, is, you know, going early and just being very open to trying things but not getting obsessed with the technology. That was my first learning from ABC.
What next?
So then for O10 APAC, we were doing all face-to-face workshops in the US and New Zealand. In March, we got some calls. You can't travel to the US. That happened first. You can't travel to New Zealand. That happened second. So I had April of nothing, just basically, oh, hang on. Now, I had also said, because I'd moved ABC pretty early, hey, do we want to move online, folks? But in those days, everyone was pretty much going, what is going on? Can we just wait a little bit and maybe you can come over in a couple of months? Which seems ridiculous now, but of course at the time we just didn't know what was happening, did we, Mike? So so there was this moment of stop, but I just kept on thinking, okay, so what can we learn from this already at that point? Okay, so a couple of things. The first one was we did go to Zoom pretty quickly because, you know, that was an easy platform to use and very simple. And some of the benefits that I found was, so first of all, in the ABC, we had access because we could record any time rather than going into the studio and recording on a Friday. I could actually just be in my pajamas and interview good people from the US, from Europe. And we didn't have that in the show really before because we were trying to do everything face to face. So that was access to global people. Now, the way this has played out in terms of professional services and the work is that, of course, your teams are often global. And before, you had everyone all based in one place, but suddenly everyone has their own space where they can participate equally in calls wherever you are. So you can have this different sense of a team online, which I absolutely love. And then in terms of humanizing business, when I do a Zoom call with people, I can actually see into their lives. I can see into their homes. And that is so real. And I don't think we've ever had the opportunity to have that type of insight into people. And I think people changed as a result of that, which I'm finding really fascinating.
So I want to talk more about the teamwork aspect of all of this, both in terms of you and your team and also in terms of your work with teams and other organizations. Because one of the huge challenges I think we've all confronted and had to wrestle with is how to sort of think about and practice the art of team building in an essentially virtual environment. And so talk about what you've learned, what you experienced in your own practice, and what you've observed with the organizations you've worked with. So what have been effective strategies, ineffective strategies? Where are we in learning how to constitute teams and communities online?
Maybe a big reflection was, don't just plonk everything that you did offline into the online world. What do I mean by that is we thought carefully about what is the essence of the engagement and the experience that we want to create for the other person, and how might you look at the online world in a way that plays to its strengths? So, for example, like in radio, I don't start every episode going, oh, I wish I had visuals today. What a bummer I don't have visuals, right? we go the theatre of the mind, magic of radio, intimacy, immediacy, and we look at the beauty of that and we bring it to life through the power of radio. So I looked at online as this challenge as well. We don't go, oh, what a pity we're not face-to-face today. We went, oh, what can we do that we can't do when, you know, we are face to face? So here's an example. Our work, we do these face to face workshops, and we look deeply into conversations being a linchpin to implement your strategy. So it's actually through human to human interaction that you do anything in business, right? So right. We would normally create a big stage where I sit in a lounge chair and I effectively interview people in front of other people to unpack conversations, and I help you analyze how did you bring yourself to a conversation and what did you learn from that conversation, how did you hold a conversation. Now, that usually takes a day, it's quite a fun experience. It's like a stage show. Now, instead of just plonking that on Zoom, like imagine a whole day of listening to other people talking about their conversations, that you could be pretty disengaged by the end of the day. So we turned it into a private podcast, Mike. So I took my radio skills and mixed it in, and I actually interviewed people individually, got it absolutely beautifully produced. So that became a little magical episode where you could hear a conversation with another human being unpacking, things that happen with their most important client relationships in terms of the conversations that they had with their clients. And we even got the client voice in there. So that's the magic, right? So that's an example of doing something which is the essence and not just plonking it online.
So how have your clients reacted to this, right? So this sounds brilliant from your standpoint, but I'm curious about do the people that you work with, do they find this effective? Do they buy in to this transformative use of the technology? Is it as useful in this new medium as the original version was in the face-to-face context?
And so, and this is the thing about a design brief and an intention, Mike. So when we're designing an experience for clients, and I think this is relevant for everyone, to think about, well, what's the starting point that this client is coming into this? So this is an empathy point. So if your client is not comfortable with a certain piece of technology, then, you know, and I know that you've experienced this, Mike, don't try and force it on them. So we actually asked, you know, where are things at? How do you want to play this? And they were really busy at the time. So very busy people who didn't want to spend 2 days on a Zoom call. Fair enough, right? So the design brief was actually asynchronous content consumption. So the thing about a private podcast is, you know, it was compulsory really to listen to the 6 episodes by the time we got together, but do it when you want to. So people were doing it when they were gardening, when they were going on a run, a walk, before bed, you know, take it in whenever and wherever you want. We did it in a way which was engaging and short, to be honest. There was a lot of editing. and then we come together and then think about why are we coming together. So we're coming together because we're sharing our learnings together and as a cohort. And so we called it a pod club, like a book club, because the purpose of a book club is to think, well, let's make meaning together. And so it was actually a really short but beautiful time together where we facilitated and then we did some breakout rooms using Zoom on how do we actually analyze and make meaning from what we've heard separately. So we're sort of playing around with that and, you know, horses for courses. So we are, you know, customizing different things and coming up with different ways to interact, with the different teams.
So do you, as part of this process, which sounds fascinating to me, and I'm listening to you describe it and I'm reflecting in my mind about how I might appropriate some of your strategies in terms of teaching and my students. But I'm wondering about if you've gotten, participation in the media production side with some of the other members of the team. So you've obviously invested a lot of your time and your expertise and production talent in generating these private podcasts and then using those and the distributed experience of those to then knit together the shared experience at the end of the day. I'm wondering about whether outside of your contributions, other participants in these design processes are themselves creating content and also sharing it as part of the process.
Yeah, and here's the other point. So I think when you're coming together to think about how do we do things online or how do we pivot here, the first thing we actually did was what are our superpowers, Mike? So really thinking about identifying your unique skills and attributes that you're going to throw into the pot here. So the reason why we came up with a private podcast was, of course, because I'm a trained radio presenter and I do interviews and I have these skills that I can contribute. So you look at your team, and we actually created a special design team of which I was one of 7 people who met together regularly for huddles with the intention to build something really special, bringing our superpowers together. Because, I mean, don't tell anyone this, but I've got a whole heap of weaknesses, Mike. And so there's a lot of gaps to fill. So I was telling you about my strength there, right? But actually what it required was people with amazing organizational production skills, you know, project management, engagement, distribution, you know, so many things to make it happen. And we all threw all of our skills, to be honest, into the pot to come up with this idea of the what is the experience that we're trying to create.
So one of the things that's so fascinating about your description, and it's reminded me of some of the podcast episodes that we were together on earlier on, is how much this description conflicts with a lot of the standard narrative of the experience of lawyers in particular, right? You know, law students come through their training and there is a standard set of skills that all lawyers are supposed to master. And then once lawyers go into the practice of law, there's a standard set of expectations and skills that may vary a little bit depending on what field of practice you're in, but there's kind of a standard definition of a lawyer. And what you're describing is in many respects saying that we need to expand our perspective, and the conditions of the pandemic have really exposed the need to expand that perspective and then to think of that in really productive and creative and innovative ways.
I love that. And I also, yes, and that. So I think lawyers are conditioned to think and act in a certain way, and it is a beautiful way and absolutely perfect for being a lawyer. And there's so many things that I've benefited from that amazing training of attention to detail and asking yourself, what could possibly go wrong? in all respects, right? So that's a wonderful thing to have. Now, because we are whole human beings, we all innately have these other aspects of ourselves, which we don't. So we absolutely need that when we're doing a contract and when we're doing our pieces of litigation. But we also need to pay attention to the other gears, the other aspects of ourselves, when we're doing things like team building, creating new things, thinking about things in a different way, flexing, you know, pivoting and all those good things that you need to do in times of chaos, which is all the time. And I would say that unless you are doing your legal advice for your own intellectual folly, surely you need to be attaching it to something, right? So there's some need that you're trying to solve. So at the end of the day, you still need other people. I mean, this is my whole, you know, shtick, isn't it? Is that strategy and law is not done in a vacuum. You do need to interact with other human beings in order to bring this to life. So what are you doing in that respect? And what I think you need is to double down on being human, is to tap into that idea of caring about this other person. And, you know, so I've got, that's our methodology, is how do you enhance the empathetic side of yourself so that you can connect with another human being so that you can solve their problems properly, right? So this other side is within us all. Sometimes it's more dormant than others. But I have seen the most amazing things happen when you tap into the creativity of lawyers. Woo, it is phenomenal. It actually is mind-blowing. And far and away, I have seen the most profound shifts. And the color and beauty of it is like, it's really exciting. So I actually think exciting times in a way, because this chaos has forced us to bring our whole selves to work.
It's given us in the larger context for us has done something that oftentimes I find anyway, I have to be sort of intentional or purposeful about doing in a micro way, which is giving my students permission to be imaginative and creative. And when I do that and they are receptive, then fabulous things happen. Now we've had a large scale world changing event that is basically forcing people to be imaginative and creative. So there's a kind of macro permission that has been given across the board, which I find really fascinating. So we're recording this conversation. We're having this conversation at the tail end of 2020. It's going to go out into the world at the very beginning of 2021. And at some point, we all hope during 2021, depending on where you are geographically, the pandemic will roll away and become less critical. So I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about your vision and what are you going to take into 2021 from this experience, and how are you going to adjust, how you approach your radio presenting role? How are you going to adjust your collaboration and innovation consulting role? What's going to be different, and what are you going to be communicating out there to the world next year?
I'm going to go meta for a second. So you introduced me to Robert Putnam and the idea of the me to we. I think in a parallel way, I have been fascinated by the work of Otto Sharma from MIT. His work has helped me navigate through tough times during COVID. Essentially, the part that I've taken from his work, so it's work with the Presencing Institute, and they were doing a lot of global conversations. So he says, in times of chaos, we have a choice. We can either turn away from each other, so, start stealing toilet paper and stocking up, for example, or we can turn towards each other. We can engage with each other. And I actually think this applies, profoundly to the business world, and it's a call to action. And in order to turn towards each other, he talks about three things, and it's approaching things with an open mind, an open heart, and open will. An open mind, curiosity; an open heart, compassion; and open will is courage. They have effectively been my values and my North Star for quite a long time, without actually being conscious of it. But now that I'm conscious of it, there are choices to make. So how does this play out? So the work that I do in business is about moving from an ego system, win-lose, scarcity, me, to an ecosystem view. That is, that we actually can be abundant, there is win-win, there is collaboration, teamwork, glory in the whole being greater than the sum of the parts, Love, not war. All of these good things, right? And that's so me. And that's his words, ecosystem to ecosystem. And I love that. And so I'm looking at, in all my work, saying, if we're not going this alone, who are the people, who are the other organizations in our ecosystem that we could actually be partnering with consciously, creating deep, intentional relationships with the individuals in these organizations to come up with a much more profound, greater whole? What is our highest potential as an ecosystem? So we're doing work in New Zealand, for example, and, really having New Zealand businesses go, well, if we sort of join forces now in a co-opetition way, so there's competition. Now, and the concept of co-opetition is, where are the elements within the competition that we can actually help each other? Because, it's actually not that clear who your competitors are in a global world, is it, anymore? Because you can't really, it's really hard to draw the market in this world, because banks can become internet providers, telcos can become content providers. It's like very confusing. So instead of sort of going, well, you're my competitor and we're at war with you, you say, oh, we're the elements where actually we can create a greater whole. So that's the work that I really want to focus on. Next year, this year, whenever this podcast comes out, in the future.
So in the links on the website for the podcast, I'll include a link to Otto Sharma and the Presencing Institute. And you mentioned Robert Putnam. And for people listening to the podcast, he is a very well-known American academic. He's at Harvard University. He published a very highly regarded book a few years ago called Bowling Alone. And he has a new book out very recently called The Upswing, which, as Lisa said, is about the pendulum swinging from me to we, which is very consistent with everything that you just said. For people who want kind of a research grounding to a lot of this stuff, there's a lot of material out there, and it's all very contemporary. Lisa, for the last comment, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you see translating all of those values and instincts about ecosystems and collaboration in an uncertain and complex world into sort of grounded practice. You know, for people who are practicing lawyers or managing law offices or law departments or their legal tech entrepreneurs, how do you guide folks like that into acting on this vision that you've got?
So the most practical thing I can say is that your moment of truth is every conversation that you have. So every conversation that you have is an opportunity to connect and to be resonant with another human being. So please see them as another human being and not, a sort of to-do list tick. People's time is precious. You know, they've got all their hopes and dreams wrapped up in a little package, and you can kind of be there to explore that with them. So that's being curious. I mean, that's that value of being curious. The compassion side is about empathy. And so, you know, we have a methodology or an approach that looks at how would you create empathy, and Stanford's got, you know, something called an empathy map, you know, which you can use, and you can Google that in order to help you think about how would I walk in another person's shoes. So that's another practical tip there, and think about, you know, how do I bring empathy and compassion into all of the work that I do with other human beings. And then the will part, so that's the courage part, is this idea of seeing every day is lab day. Life is an experiment. And for any sort of students listening, I talk a lot about designing your work life. Because, you know, for me, I mean, I was a lawyer, then a radio presenter, now sort of blended both. This attitude of you need courage to try something different. It comes out in micro acts of bravery. You don't need to go, and I'm not saying, you know, sort of need to go skydiving, because I certainly wouldn't be doing that. Micro acts of bravery is just do something today that you might are just a bit scared about doing. Make that phone call. Ask someone for help. You know, just play the guitar. I don't know. Do something every day that kind of scares you. That's a micro act of bravery. And that, I think that's going to propel you into designing or reaching your highest potential here. And then, so just one thing is to just try something different. So that's kind of my practical tips on how to bring those three things to life.
Fabulous. Well, let's bring this conversation to an end for today. But all that means is that we're just going to have you come back every 6 months, and you and I will have a conversation on this podcast, and I and everyone listening to the podcast will get a dose of inspiration from all of that narration, which I thought was brilliant, and it concluded with a really tactile and useful and specific example. I'll just tell you one quick anecdote, and then we'll call it for the day. I have a habit of just occasionally reaching into my email threads from long ago, my Gmail account, and sending hi, how are you emails to people I haven't been in touch with for 2, 3, 5 years. Yeah. And sometimes this, you know, you don't get anything back, but I haven't lost too much. But once in a while, I get an email back. And the email back is universally, wow, it's great to hear from you. What have you been up to? This is what I've been up to. And it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's in great shape. People have lives, and lives have pathways. But that little bit of connection, and reaching out and just connecting over and over again is affirming. And it's especially affirming in times like this where things are difficult and challenging and complicated. So, these micro moments, and you just like it picks you up for a bit of time, and it, sometimes it leads to something, and sometimes it doesn't. But that's not really the point. The point is just to have these connections and reaffirming them from time to time. So I like that just in my own life as kind of an example of what you're talking about just trying something at a micro level that's not quite in your usual comfort zone.
And I must say, you know, I got your email after we hadn't spoken for a year, and I do feel bad that I wrote back to you, who are you?
Well, there you are. Am I sure? Do I have the right Lisa Leone? One never knows. Lisa, this has been brilliant. I'm so happy that we were able to have this conversation today and get caught up. So I want to wish you all the best for 2021. And it's a promise. We will continue to include you as part of the podcast family.
Yay.
At the Future Law Podcast.
Reunion. I love reunions.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Future Law Podcast. For links to the articles mentioned and to contact the hosts, visit futurelawpodcast.com.